You're listening to the Laugh Factory Podcast Network. For more shows, visit the podcast page at laughfactory.com.
It's the After Laugh, After Laugh. Welcome to the After Laugh, After Laugh, After Laugh. After Laugh, man. Go ahead, pull up a chair.
Hey guys, welcome to the After Laugh. I am here in my trailer in Austin, Texas with my friend Rachel McMillan, who is a... Wait, are you... You are Jewish, right?
No.
Oh, that's true. I always think you're Jewish, and then you're never Jewish.
No.
Because I'm Jewish.
You're Jewish.
I'm Jewish.
Oh, my Lord.
You didn't hear me? Did you hear my set? I talked about that.
It's in your set, but
before
I
was,
you know.
Yeah, you do a set, and then people go, is that true? I'm like, why would I do 5 minutes about converting to Judaism as a lie? There are comics who do that, and I fucking hate it.
Well...
It's like a real thing. Like, I don't know why. It bugs me.
You said you converted when your daughter was born?
No, I converted because I met this bitch. And no, I met a very nice lady. And she was a fucking Jew. And we were getting serious. And I'm at the age where I was like, well, shit, am I ever getting married? Am I ever having another daughter? So I, and she, you know, nice Jewish family. Very smart. Great girl. I have nothing bad. She actually just texted today. Nothing bad to say about her. She's a nice lady. And she was, when we were first dating, she was 34, which in Jewish world is like 78. 34 is like, oh my God, you're never going to have kids. You're barren. You know, so it's, if you don't have a kid by 34 in the Jew, and she's in the Jewish community, mm-hmm. like the community, she is actually a Jewish matchmaker. That's her job. She's a doula. So she had been with like very wealthy Jewish doctors and lawyers before me. And I think she was so ensconced in the community that we met on Tinder.
What?
Yeah. And I think she just said, here's someone who's the opposite of everything that I've experienced.
In what city?
New York.
Okay.
And I've always had terrible experience on dating apps, like pretty much across the board. Usually... that'd be an interesting subject to talk about as a single lady,
mm-hmm. totally.
Single attractive lady who is from Houston, Rachel McMillan. And how long have you been single, by the way?
A year.
Mm-hmm. And have you been on the apps?
No.
Really?
Really.
Have you, I'm assuming you've dated since in the past year.
Not really.
No. Just boned some folks. Got it. Okay.
Just one.
Really? The one that we know? Our friend? We won't name names. Oh, okay. Good to know. Anyway.
Could be a girl.
Oh.
But it's a guy.
Now we're talking. So I think that what the general thing that happens with dating apps is men lie about their age and success.
Say they're what?
Oh. Well, they just lie about their age. Either they're vague or they lie about their age or their success level. Yeah. And women lie about their weight.
Right. Oh.
Yeah.
Can you put your weight on there?
No,
well.
But you should. Because I'll tell you why. And I did a joke about this the
but
other
you
day.
Should.
Because why not do jokes about things that everyone's going to feel uncomfortable about? Because for women, for example, in these dating apps, I think every dating app, you have parameters, right? For example, one parameter would be they have to be within 50 miles of this location. If they're not, it's a deal breaker.
Yeah.
They have to be – there are certain things that can be a deal breaker or not. And one of the things for women as a deal breaker is a man's height.
Yeah.
So you can say, I'm only going to date someone 6 feet or above.
Mm-hmm.
And you won't match with anyone under 6 feet.
Right.
So women can just casually put that as a preference.
But you can't put weight.
But you can't – so I'm the joke I said – I
full
said,
C's.
I, you know, sometimes just I met a girl. She's like, oh, I told you I'm 6 feet. She goes, I only date guys over 6 feet.
What?
Yeah, for real. And I said, hey, I'm
she
not mad.
She must be 5'10".
Yeah, or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Maybe she's, sometimes they're like five. Here's another thing weird about dating apps too with these women. They're definitely outside the bell curve. I think the men and the women. The women are usually like 5'2" or 6 feet tall. the women that are like 5'5" to 5'8" aren't on the apps.
Yeah.
But above 5'9" and under 5'3", that's all the apps are. It's fucking weird, right? And then if the women are like 20 and 5'8", like, well, they're there because they're a prostitute. So, and I wish that was the case. And sometimes you see these really, really
hot. Do they have prostitute apps?
Oh, Tinder is 1,000% a prostitute app.
Should I get on it?
Maybe.
No.
How much money do you need? But they also, here's another thing about Tinder, which is very weird. And I haven't even gone on a date with anyone from it. I usually
you converted to Judaism for a woman on.
That's true. But I mean recently, since I've recently been single, I have not gone on dates with people from Tinder. But it's still, for some reason, I can't.
What made you want to be like,
What?
Get on Tinder. What made you? Because you're a good looking.
Okay, this is what made me do it. I did this TV show called Alaska Daily. And if you guys are watching the show, please watch Alaska Daily. Watch the whole season. You can binge it. My big episode is episode 7. So if you want to just watch episode 7, you can do that. But you should watch the whole thing because I think it builds to that whole – my character builds. Anyway, so I'm in Vancouver. I get there and I'm supposed to be there for a week. I get there. Within 2 days, it's announced that Hillary's pregnant. So right away, Hillary Swank. Oh, I just dropped a name. So once someone is pregnant, there's a whole new set of SAG rules that have to come into place. I think they could only work 4 hours a day.
So did you get to have a sex scene?
No sex scene. So I think they only work 4 hours a day. And then I think okay, we're going to need you for 2 weeks, basically.
Is it contract? That's just...
Because she's pregnant, so she only has a certain amount of time to work. Either it's SAG rules, or she said, now that I'm pregnant, I can only work this time.
I'd walk through snow.
So I was like, oh, she'll be here a little bit longer. That's fine. I had a beautiful corner penthouse suite in Vancouver. I didn't know anybody there. Literally didn't know anyone there. The only one person I knew was a fellow comic named Cameron Esposito, who's amazing, and she's there for a million little things, and she's a lesbian. And I was like, hey, let's hang out. Let's be friends because you're cool. Yeah. And she was like, yeah, sure. And I never saw her. Then after 5 days of me being there, she gets COVID. So she's pregnant and COVID. So then they have to shut down for like 10 days.
Oh, my gosh.
And I'm still there. I'll sit tight. So at that point, I'm like, I'm going to lose my... I can only rollerblade around the goddamn bay for so many hours. Yeah. So I got on Tinder. And really, honestly, it was truly just to have someone to fucking hang out with.
Yeah.
And I would literally meet up for lunch and talk to people and I'm okay, bye, and wouldn't see him. I mean, don't get me wrong. But so that's why I got on. That's why I got on. And then I'd been banned from every dating app before. Don't look at me like that. The reason I got banned, and I'm not making that. This is true. The reason I got banned is because you're not allowed to promote comedy shows on these apps. So I would go. The reason I did it, as you can tell, look at this. Look at the crowd. That Rachel's a fellow comic. She's a producer too. She produced a comedy show where I was the headliner, and not a lot of people showed up to say
the only ones that mattered.
So my point is, I am not a draw in comedy. I headline all over the place, and I do great when I headline, but like, I am not a draw. But if I get on Tinder,
my God,
there are people who will Google me and then know me. Oh, I know you from this and that and da-da. And I can get people to come to shows from Tinder. So if I did the Tinder promotion for this show, I could have easily gotten – it's a 3:30 p.m. show on top of it.
Yeah.
But I could have easily gotten 10 people, 10 women. And sometimes I go, hey, I'm in Vegas. Come to my show. And they go, okay, this is a date. I'm like, well, I'm just kind of doing gigs right now, blah, blah, blah. But I'm going to comp you and I'll get you a drink. And 9 times out of 10, I'm like, that sounds great. Can I bring a date? And I'm like, of course. They'll show up with a date. And they're cool, and sometimes we become friends. But sometimes women will show up with their friend, a girlfriend, and then they buy a T-shirt after the show. And then I go, bye. And then they go, okay. One of the worst examples.
How'd you get caught?
Because all it takes is one woman to come to a show and maybe not like me because I say cunt so many times or whatever it is. just not like
me. Pointing at her.
Or it has happened before. In New York, it happened where I would heavily promote in New York and have all these women come. I think one of them had like 10 women come.
That's a lot of women to come.
I wasn't like, hey, you're so hot. Can't wait to hang with you after the show, winky face, dot, dot, dot.
You met him on a dating app.
Okay. But even my dating app was like, I'm in town doing shows. If you want free tickets, I wasn't even pushing for it. So they deleted me and they said, you can't use it for promotion. So it's like, fuck. So I did it again. I got back on Tinder again and I did it for promotion again, but I tried to be more subtle and they banned me again. And now every time they ban you, you need to get a different phone number or a different email.
Get OnlyFans.
Get OnlyFans. Yeah, that's probably what
you're doing. Seriously, just do.
Do you have an OnlyFans?
No. I did not promote this sexy body at all because I have kids. Like, I'm an OnlyFans.
Yeah, and how old are your kids again?
Whatever age they are. 16 and 15. They're not, well, almost, yeah.
Wow, that's crazy. And they're both boys, right?
Both boys, thank God. I do want a little girl, though. I need to find a nice...
Are you still able to make a baby?
Yeah. Why not?
You still got, I don't know how old you are. Are you in your 30s or are you 40s?
41.
Yeah, 41, you can still make a baby.
I got a couple of years to.
Are you at the age where you're like, hey, listen, you look like you got good swimmers.
I have a bad picker. I've had a bad picker this past couple of years, I think.
Do you mean in terms of
years.
Fertilization, or do you mean in terms of
both, I guess. Fertilization and to
Were you trying to get pregnant with your ex-fiance?
No.
There's a lot of inside stories and jokes between me and Rachel that are existing right now. Because we know all these people. Okay. So,
I wouldn't, if I had gotten pregnant, I wouldn't have.
Aborted it.
No.
Yeah.
No. Yeah, but I definitely, I would, yeah.
So what if you got someone pregnant?
Then I'd have a dick.
Oh, you have a dick. I have a dick. By the way, the other thing about Tinder, it has been, like so many things in this world, is overrun by trans women.
Wow.
And trans women as thumbnails are killing the game. Thumbnails of a trans woman on your phone.
Do you still go for it when you... No?
When I find out?
Have you ever?
No.
How do you lie? Do they...
This is what I'll say about the trans women. I think I can safely say. There is a narrative being pushed that if you're a straight man and you do not want to have sex with a trans woman, which I think for whatever reason, and I'm not saying it's because it's gross, it's gay. I'm too much of a nerd. I'll put it out there. I'm too square. I'm too much of a nerd. My programming from my Republican father, blame him.
Yeah.
I can't get my mind around it. Yeah. I get my mind around them doing it, and I'll hang and be friends and hug, and they want to show me their dick or their bit, fine, whatever. I don't care. I just cannot get into the idea of having sex with a trans woman. I'm sure it's great. I hear the technology is mwah, bellissimo. Oh, I had a friend go into detail about having sex with a trans woman and said it was – and I was – and I mean, I don't know if I should even talk about it right now. Why the fuck not? Because basically they cut the dick in the half and through the middle. Down the, and then they curve it in, right? So they take the dick, they split it like a, and then they curve it in.
Is it the same?
What do you
mean? Your friend, did they say?
No, this is what they said. It was so crazy. So basically they take the dick, they cut it straight down the line. So it's like, they cut the dick half, so it folds over, and they fold it in, right? And then they suture it up, and I don't know what else they do, something. But so he said when she, and I believe in the proper pronoun, when she gets excited, basically her quote unquote dick gets engorged. So her pussy gets tighter.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he was like, oh, it's fucking great. And I was like, nah, I get it. Look, if that's your thing. More power to you.
I've never had sex with a girl. I mean, I've been asked that a lot.
You never have sex with a girl?
Yeah, like I've never... Come on.
You've made out with a girl, obviously. You're a person.
Yeah, sure. I'm a person. I've made out with a girl. A girl's made out with me.
Yes.
Yes.
It's very rare to meet a girl that I find interesting or cool that hasn't at least made out with another girl.
Yeah. It's not my thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So. But if a girl was really hot and she was like, let me go down on
I've
you.
I've had a lot of girls hit on me.
And they want to go down on you and you're like, no.
Yeah.
Yeah?
I've had one of my closest girlfriends, I'm horny, can I come over? And I said, no.
Where is she tonight?
Anyway. She's in Houston.
I'm kidding. So, because people have asked, like, what if a guy's really, really attractive guy? And to me, it's just, again, I'm not saying it's not moral, right or wrong. It's not because of the Bible or God or anything. I just, and I'm sure it'll feel great because I'm sure gay guys can suck a dick. They probably eat asshole. They have no problem with licking an ass. So I'm sure it's great. But I just think that I wouldn't. Too much programming.
It goes from Judaism converting to eating asshole. I love it.
Oh, yeah, of course.
I mean, well, what were
Jews
you?
Don't have any problem eating ass. Come on. So I think.
Some of them do. No.
But I think that the same reason why I could never be an atheist, because I've been programmed since birth to believe in God. As much problems as I have with organized religion and Christianity and, you know, all of them, I can never see myself existing on the planet without believing in God, without believing in something akin to a benevolent guiding force in the universe. I can't believe in atheism and entropy and all that shit. And nothing means anything, like the little lesbian chicken.
Is it your
chicken.
Moral compass? Maybe?
I don't even know if it's just – maybe it's just fear. But I think it's also just like the type of program you get before age 5 is so ingrained. Your neural pathway, as much as my neural pathways have been like dismantled by different things, I can't get rid of that. I never, even in my most collegiate of phases where I was, you know, getting drunk a lot, and maybe the first time I smoked weed, I could never entertain the idea of there not being a God. It just doesn't make sense to me. In that same way, whether it's programming or whatever the fuck it is or intuition, the same way I cannot get behind being with a trans woman. And I don't have a
problem. That's interesting.
I don't have a problem. And part of me is like, well, I should. It'd be great if I was cool enough to do that. It'd be great if I was cool enough to fuck a dude. I know plenty of straight guys who like hook up with guys sometimes. I'm like, great. I don't have a problem with it, but I just can't. Anyway, so the narrative is that if you are a straight guy and you don't have sex with a trans woman, then you're transphobic. That is what is being bandied about. And when men say, no, I don't want to fuck a trans woman because that's gay, which is their opinion. It's not because I think it's gay. Then the question is, well, then why won't you be gay? Who cares? If that's a problem, just being gay. I don't think being gay is a problem. So on that level, I just don't think that I would be attracted enough to enjoy myself. Does that make sense? Like, I was at a strip club one time.
Men's or women's?
A regular Christian women's strip club. And there was a girl. I was in a semi-private booth. My friend was in the next booth. And she just unzipped my pants and started blowing me. I swear to God, without any – there's no money. There's no – I didn't ask for it. She was just like, you're cute. And then she like zipped and started.
Here
and I was
in
like,
Austin?
No, this was in L.A., in the Valley. You know those Valley strip clubs. Eesh. And because she's a professional sex worker, it was technically like – and she was not unattractive. But as it was happening, and I – like, you know when a woman is going down on you, you know right away, oh, she could make me come. Because the truth is 99% of women can't make me come. 91% of women are like – so and maybe I just got an old grumpy dick. I don't know. But I was like, oh, shit. She could make me – so I stopped her because the idea of – coming in a stripper's mouth in a strip club in the Valley would literally make me suicidal. Now, that's not a moral compass. That's just, again, I think it's old programming and old beliefs. It's just,
you're already there, though.
Huh?
You're already there. You know, you're already.
I'm already what?
At the strip club, getting your dick sucked. I'd just be like, all right, I'm going to finish. You know?
God, no, I can't do
it.
It just, yeah, but maybe you don't understand the male orgasm well enough to understand that after you have maybe it's not all men, but definitely me. It's why I don't watch porn. I can't watch porn. I can't do it. I used to. I can't. But something struck me. If you're watching porn, and when you're watching it, great. Oh, she's hot, but and then you, bleh, the minute you
ejaculate, as it was,
and that that's still playing in the background, it fills you with revulsion.
Mm.
For me, it fills me with. So I would come and immediately like, shut the computer. And sometimes you'd shut it and it wouldn't shut all the way. You'd still hear the sounds. You're like, mm-hmm. Stop.
Mm-hmm.
And then I realized that if I'm doing this, I'm ejaculating, which is, you know, is my chi, my energy, part of, and I'm shooting into the wind. And my immediate feeling afterwards is, ugh, that's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
That's a problem.
So doing it in a stripper's mouth at a strip club.
So stripper's mouth, watching porn, even having sex with someone who, I mean, you don't have to like everyone. You don't have to like love or you know, even really like, but you don't have sex with someone where like the minute you come, you're just like, get me out of here.
Yeah.
I know guys, normal guys. We actually saw one of them today
mm-hmm.
on stage.
Yeah.
At Greek in the Cave.
Oh, yeah.
The show after hours.
Okay.
Nice cop, successful guy.
Yeah.
Guy. We were hanging out in New York one time. He goes, man, I want to go get like a hand job from one of those Japanese massage or Korean massage places. You want to come? I was like, well, I don't want to. I'll go walk over there with you. And I was kind of curious. So we go to this place. It's like, if you know Manhattan, it's like 38th Street between 7th and 8th type of vibe.
Mm-hmm.
Which is just like, ugh.
Okay.
Ugh, like the detritus from fucking Port Authority. It's awful. Everything is sort of, the only thing that gives it any legitimacy is there's some fashion houses around there.
Mm-hmm.
You walk up some steps and there's these, you know, and this woman comes out and she was, I mean, this Asian woman, she had to be 70 something.
Jesus.
Nice lady, I'm sure. Oh, come with me. She goes in to the room. I sit in the waiting room.
Like not because
I'm
like, doctor.
I'm so much better. But I just was like, I can't do it. Do you want the massage? No, I'm good. Are you sure? Yeah, wait. And you can hear what's happening in the room. And so I'm thinking this woman took this guy into a room and then there's eight beautiful Asian women in lingerie and you could choose like an Enter the Dragon or something. But no, it's this old 70-plus-year-old woman just gave my buddy HJ, and it lasted, you know, the whole thing probably lasted less than 10 minutes.
Jesus.
And he came out, and I swear to you, he came out, and he just – his posture was better. His face was brighter. He was happy. So there, some people have a different relationship with it than me.
Yeah, it's still a release of the, you know, dopamine chemicals, but you can't – to me, I can't just, I'm monogamous. I have to sleep with the same person. So I don't have really in-betweens in relationships. I don't do one night stands. I don't do.
Yeah.
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 Cause I have to be connected spiritually or something.
It has to be something. I mean, I hate it when people
emotionally
say I'm a sapiosexual. One of the women I met in Vancouver,
mm-hmm.
gorgeous.
On Tinder.
It might have been, yeah, I can't get it back on Bumble. Are you kidding me?
I don't know.
Oh, give me your phone number. I can get a Bumble. You need a phone number.
This is what this whole podcast is about.
Yeah, give me a phone number. I need to get back on Bumble. But, she was gorgeous. And maybe Vancouver, it might have been Hinge. I don't remember. Beautiful, cool. I take her to lunch. She is a former model. She's probably like 42 or something now. Now she lives on a ranch and she takes care of horses and she's an equestrian and, you know, and I'm asking her questions about her life. I'm interested. I'm, you know, rule number one, date, don't be interesting, be interested, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm asking all these questions about herself. I'm figuring out like how she left modeling and what she's doing now and she has a kid and da-da. And it was good. And we go back to my corner suite. And we go into the bedroom, and I'm like, okay, it's happening. And we're kissing a little bit, and I'm not getting like she's so into the kissing. Not like she's like, stop. She's just kind of like, she's not, I'm not getting any sort of like, like sometimes you kiss someone and then there's a reaction.
Yeah.
Like you hear it, you mm-hmm. see it. It's like their eyes, like there's a feeling of, ugh. But it was more just like, okay, maybe I was like, okay, maybe I got to kiss her neck or da da da. And she was wearing a half shirt and I started kissing her belly. I was like, maybe I'll just go down on her. That'll be my way to get her going. And she goes, well, you can keep doing that. Like in this regular non-bedroom voice, you can keep doing that, but it's just I'm not really into it. I go, oh, well, I don't want to do it then, obviously. Like, okay. So she goes, yeah, well, I'm a sapiosexual. And I said, oh, good. I said, what do you mean by that? Well, you know, I get really turned on by intellect. So I said, I go, I got 1520 on my SATs.
Mm-hmm.
Does that help? I went to Princeton. Graduate cum laude with aerospace. Is that? No, it's not that. Okay. So then I'm thinking, what does she want me to, does she want me to start going on about string theory? What the fuck is she want? And then I realized she's just dumb. And what she wants is an alpha male who's going to like just rah, 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 and talk about himself. She's like, ooh, I'm so turned on by his sapio-ness. So,
also known as a narcissist.
She was a narcissist. And I'm just under narcissist. So she, and I just realized like if someone says they're sapiosexual, like usually it just means, I think men say they're sapiosexuals because they want to look like they're not man whores. And women say they're sapiosexual so they don't look dumb.
I just don't talk to people who say that.
It's a dumb thing to say.
It is.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm a sapiosexual. Because I'm like, you're implying that I'm dumb.
Yeah.
Isn't that the implication there?
Or she wants you to just talk nonsense to her.
And part of me wants to say, like, you understand that the conversation
I know
that
world
we were
history.
Having was like me asking about your life.
Yeah.
And you retold your life in very boring, non-funny, non-interesting detail.
So did you have sex with her?
No, that was it. That was it. I was like, okay,
what
cool.
What a bitch.
And I just, you know, I was like, well, we don't have to, you know, let's just hang out. And we walked home and I think I maybe invite her to a movie at some point later. I don't know. And she's fine. But I was just, it's just such a weird thing that like, no. You see, I'm a sapiosexual. Do you know what that is?
It pissed you off.
Yeah, it's a fucking bitch. That's what it is. Anyway, speaking of narcissists, I've been talking way too much. I want to get into your story because you have a very interesting story.
Do I?
You have a very interesting life. You have a lot of, you are someone who.
A lot of moving parts there, yeah.
A lot of moving parts. A lot of, shall we say, demons.
Something like that.
I just hurt my throat.
Yeah.
So, let's give the soup to nuts story for our audience. You were born a small black child.
Yes.
You were born a non-Jew who looks kind of like a Jew. Where are you born again?
I was born in Fort Worth, Texas.
Texas.
Adopted.
Oh, you were adopted.
I was adopted.
So you might be a Jew.
Probably. Who knows what
I am. Have you done the
23? I'm Mexican.
Oh, wait. Your 23andMe is not 100% Mexican. You're not 100% Mexican. There's no way.
No, I'm not 100%. My mom was white. Yeah, she's white. She actually just found out a couple of years ago about my biological family. My dad does not speak English. He's 100% Mexican, and my mom was white.
Do you want some water, by the way?
Yeah, I think.
Do you want
I
that?
Pop this?
Those things are delicious. This podcast is sponsored by Olipop. Don't you love those?
Oh, alcohol God. Free.
So good. Oh, no, it's 100% alcohol. Yeah, it's alcohol free.
That's good.
So, yeah. So, God, the adoption thing is very interesting to me.
Yeah.
The older I get, I tell you why, the older I get, the more interesting all that becomes to me because having a daughter, having two daughters mm-hmm. now, it's very interesting to me because, for example, when I saw the TV show This Is Us,
yeah,
right? Did you see it?
Mm-hmm.
The pilot episode. One of the best episodes of TV you'll ever see. The pilot episode. Shout out to Chris Sullivan, who's on the podcast. Did they just call my name? Anyway.
They did.
They're having triplets. Mm-hmm. And they lose a triplet.
Oof.
And part of that pilot is about the pain of losing that triplet and they were in so much mm-hmm. pain and trauma and torture, so they adopted this black child from the hospital. I guess it was just a child, but they adopted a third, right? It's mm-hmm. kind of karmically, mm-hmm. whatever. And I remember thinking, like, who gives a fuck? You have three, like, you lost, like, whatever. Like, you lost a bit in childhood, you have two. Calm down. Now I have a daughter and have been there from delivery until, you know, now. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, I get it. Because I cannot imagine losing a child at 7 months, 8 months, 9 months.
Ever.
3 months, none of clean it out. But after like a certain, like you were viscerally, emotionally, spiritually connected to that little thing in that belly. Mm-hmm. The minute you see the sonogram, particularly the 3D shit, you recognize characteristics about them. I could see my baby's dimples, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? You could see like the chin that looked like my chin. It was just so, you're just already like, you imprint like they do, like the Na'vi do in Avatar. So the idea of somebody getting pregnant, and maybe it was a function of the time because abortion was, it was legal.
It was legal.
Even though it was Texas, it was legal. Mm-hmm. They could have gone to another state, I'm assuming. Or maybe it was legal in Texas at that time.
She was Catholic.
Catholic. Mm-hmm. So the idea that this woman gave, like, developed you in her belly, mm-hmm. gave birth to you, and then gave it. That's fucking amazing.
Yeah.
Because it's so easy to kill a fucking baby.
And the whole time I thought that she wanted to give me up for adoption. Mm-hmm. And then when I called, it was Edna Gladney is the adoption agency. So I called, I said, I think I'm just going to find my.
How old were you? Give me some foreplay.
How old was I when I was given up?
Well,
7 days old.
7 days old. Mm-hmm. Okay. I want to hear the whole process of how that happened. So this, because you've obviously talked to your mother about this since then,
mm-hmm.
your biological mother?
Not my biological. She's passed away from alcoholism, actually. Yeah.
Oh, God. Was she always an alcoholic?
Alcohol.
What do you know about her?
From California. She was a nurse, and she had a bad pain pill addiction.
Always.
And I don't know the length. So I have a sister who's kind of given me some insight. She's my full-blooded sister. I found out.
Full-blooded sister.
No.
So why weren't you adopted together?
My mom was 16, had me at 17, and then she rebelled, same dad, and had my sister. So had to give me up because their family's Catholic, the grandma.
Did they give up your sister for adoption too?
No.
Oh, they kept the sister.
They kept the sister.
Oh, wow. So yeah. They gave you up for adoption. She got pregnant again. She's like, fuck that.
I'm keeping the baby. Yeah.
Okay. Which you can understand.
Yeah.
I imagine there's probably a point where you probably were like, I'm very hurt by that. You probably took it personal at some point. You gave me up, but you kept her. Fuck this. Right?
So I only found out about the details 2 years ago.
Good fucking God.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Here I am talking about Tinder.
Tinder. Whatever. Whatever you got to get your groove on,
Here's a real story, Bill. So, I feel like I need the whole, I need some more, I need to go back to the beginning.
Linear.
I need to go back to the beginning. I really like the foreplay. So
my parents were in the Swiss Alps.
You were 7 days. Your dad, is your dad still alive?
He is.
Biological life?
Yeah.
Are you in a relationship with him?
I do not.
Which Home Depot does he work at?
Exactly.
Come on, that's racist as hell.
I don't even. He has his own company where he does his own Home Depot things on other people's houses.
In Texas?
In Laredo.
Which is Texas?
Yeah.
Which is not far from here, right?
It's not.
Like 2 hours?
I don't know how far. From Houston, I want to say it's six.
Okay.
Yeah.
I have no idea about Texas. Texas is fucking enormous. So your father, they were like a couple then. They weren't just banging.
Yeah. They had a young teenage love.
And
she never moved on.
And
I want to say he came across from the border.
I buy it.
Yeah.
So he was like maybe gardening.
He's like 6 foot and he was gardening. And
a 6 foot Mexican is going to pull.
He's really attractive. My dad is.
A 6 foot attractive Mexican is going to fucking pull.
Blonde hair,
green eyed.
My mom. Mm-hmm.
Oh, your mom was blonde hair, green eyed. And your dad's 6 foot tall Mexican, not 5 foot five, Cinco de Mayo.
No.
And how'd they meet? Do you know?
I don't know the backstory.
God damn, I would love to hear that backstory. Does your sister know?
I'm sure she does. She's known about me the whole time. She's known about me her whole life.
And did you reach out to her?
No, I reached out to the adoption agency
like, oh, you have a sister.
You have a sister. We have some really bad news though. Your mom has passed. I'm thinking she's fucking Selena. Like I really, I don't know. She passed away. And then, I got in touch with, I got on Facebook. I did research.
They didn't stay together, the parents.
They did not.
Yeah.
No.
So after the sister was born, how mm-hmm. much longer were they together?
Not too much longer. There was some domestic disputes. I don't know. But they were
probably both drinking. Usually both people drink in a relationship. It's not just one alcoholic, the other person just holding down. Although that was
He's really not. I don't think he is an alcoholic.
Okay.
Yeah. Maybe smokes pot. I might be making that up, but occasionally.
Do you think that she became an alcoholic after she gave you up for adoption?
I think that really affected her. Yes.
Of course.
Psychologically. I think
How
it did.
How could it not?
Yeah. So get this. They give me one letter that she wrote. It was in the hospital. And it says, I really wanted to keep you and I wanted to give you a good life. And the whole time I'm like, she just wanted to give me up. She didn't want me. It was the opposite of that.
And what's crazy about that.
It's wild.
What's crazy it's on my refrigerator. About that, again, if they just want to get rid of you, they'll abort you.
Mm-hmm.
So I think 90% of the people who put up a child for adoption, that's probably the feeling. I love you. It will be a rough life because of what's happening with me right now.
Yeah.
I think they do it out of a sense of it's the right thing and this will be better for her.
Mm-hmm.
And then it probably, for a lot of it, probably eats at them.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I couldn't. When I was pregnant with my, I got pregnant young and I couldn't even fathom giving Christian up for adoption.
Yeah. Whenever I hear about that, I'm like, I don't know.
Thomas, maybe, but not Christian.
That's so funny. This comic, Ida Rodriguez, has one of my favorite fucking jokes because it's so honest. She's really doing well now, but okay. She was single. She had a daughter and a son. And she said she was driving, I think, like the Big Sur around, like that, mm-hmm. Where the cliffs are right there mm-hmm. without guardrails years ago.
Yeesh.
And she was in a really dark place and she was literally going to drive off the cliff. And she was parked and she was looking over and she was thinking about it. And her daughter said, I love you, mama. I love you, mom. And she was like, my daughter is amazing. She's beautiful. And I was like, I can't do this to her. Now, if it was my son, you know, it's like true what she's saying. She's probably, if it was my son, fuck it. I would have gone off to live in a heartbeat. My daughter made me get paused. Anyway.
Yeah.
So this is fucking crazy. So by the way, your adoptive parents.
Yeah.
What are they like? Are they good people?
They get a call and, so in the letter also they.
Okay. So you get, we got to go back from the beginning.
They are good people.
Okay. Let's go back. I'm on the spectrum. So they need everything to be very logical.
Mm-hmm.
So when do you find out? I guess the first in the story, the adoption story, you're adopted 7 days early on. The first thing is when you find out.
Yeah, I got a book. It's called What is Adoption? This little picture book. I still have it.
When did you get that book?
Like 5 years old.
So 5 years old, mm-hmm. your parents were like, by the way, you're adopted. Mm-hmm. Now, some parents, obviously, they don't want to tell their kid. Some parents never tell their kid and their kids find out when their parents die or because of medical shit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it's obviously important to your parents that you knew you were adopted.
Mm-hmm.
And did your...
My middle name was Faith. Is Faith, sorry. Because they have faith. They had faith in waiting for my mom. Had a stillborn.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So during that time, were they in contact with the biological parents?
No, it was a closed adoption. Mm-hmm.
That's almost every adoption is a closed adoption, right?
Yeah.
Or is it voluntary?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think there is some sort of, I don't know. I don't know how that, how each.
What do you think about that? Do you think that all adoptions should be closed adoptions?
Mm,
I guess it sets up less issues.
I don't know.
It's hard though because
really on because I have kids. Is there? That's why I wanted to know if there's anything that might, you know. That's why I really didn't. I mean, think about it. It's 2 years ago. I was like 38, 39, and then all of a sudden, I'm like, I think I'm going to find my birth parents. So I didn't really have any. I just my brother. My brother's not adopted. You know, my parents are my parents. I don't really, you know.
Yeah. So your brother is their biological child.
Is their biological child.
And do they ever treat you two? Do they ever treat you two? Do you ever get the... So when did it really become clear to you that you became present to the fact that you were adopted and that your brother wasn't? Was there a moment where you're like, well,
I was
oh,
in
shit.
Preschool and I was in the bathroom and I was scraping my skin and the teacher came in and she goes, what are you doing? I just want to be like all the other kids.
Oh, because you were darker.
Really dark. Yeah. Yeah. I could say that was one of the like most That's visual wild. Moments I have of being a child and being
and you knew you were adopted
and that. I knew something was different. Yeah,
you knew something was different.
It's just something was different. Something was yeah, like not mm. I knew I was adopted, but I knew something. Just something was like there's yeah. This is like I just never really felt like they're my parents are really really just white Republican. You know, mm-hmm. So and then
are they both like blonde or something?
No.
Like if you look, if you're in the street
my dad's a pilot and my mom, you know, lost her virginity to my dad. Yeah. You know.
So when you look at, if you were on the street together, no one would think you were their child.
Not, no, I look like my, actually look like my adopted mom a little okay. bit. Yeah. Mm. But yes, I was darker. You're I was darker. Yeah.
Did they have to put up with racism? Was there like comments well, like, why is your child so
my
dark?
Uncle, yeah, my uncle would, come here, you little beaner. He's dead now. I hit him with a truck. No.
Was he nice though, or was he just he thought that was funny?
He's just a crazy person.
Yeah,
he's so nice in a crazy person way. Yeah.
So, wow. So you had the feeling there's some dysphoria about this. Mm-hmm. Did you ask your parents like, what's going on? Why am I different?
So, which genetically, I believe I have alcoholism. So I was always very yeah. Just different, separate from they. I don't know how to like the yeah. There's something missing. There's something like I'm not even personality wise like these. Like my, yeah. You know, I am you know very extroverted. You know, I like to play soccer.
Yeah,
which isn't
you know. Soccer. <It's so funny. laughs> Why do I like saying goal?
I say goal. I wanted a pinata at my birthday party.
No, you didn't, did you?
Yeah, I did.
You had no idea why. You just wanted a pinata. When you'd see Mexican things, like we'd see quinceañeras, you're like, well, I should have
I want the chiclets. And like, why are you talking like that? You're
Ese. So.
I don't know. Yeah, no, it's just, honestly, I didn't still, until I started really getting into high school and teenage years, I was rebelling in a way that didn't make sense to the way they raised
but
me.
But you knew you were adopted at that point.
But I knew I was adopted. Yeah. But
and at that point. So let's say you're
kind
13,
of all
14.
This whole story kind of summarizes into really my alcoholism and recovery, though, I'll tell
Interesting.
You.
Interesting, yeah. So 13, 14, you know you're adopted. Do you and your brother get along?
He's one of my, yeah, probably.
Were you always getting along? Mm-hmm. At some point, he's like, fuck you. You're not even my real sister. Did you ever say that? Because kids can be shitty.
Not that I recall.
Good for him.
Yeah.
I would have fucking said that if I had some adopted bitch live with me.
Yeah, right.
So
why aren't you outside mowing the lawn? Yeah, he probably
is. So you guys got along when mm-hmm. you were...
He's 7 years older than I am.
7 years. Okay, so there's... Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, so they adopted you second
He's
after
a lawyer.
Because of the stillborn. So they went, got mm-hmm. it.
Almost Couldn't very, have a little girl.
Very yeah. This Is Us.
Yeah.
Very This Is Us. Yeah. And they wanted a girl. They ordered a girl.
They really wanted a girl. Yeah. Okay. My mom breastfed me, too. So.
Wow. Mm-hmm. That's an amazing thing that a woman can just breastfeed even though she's not having pregnancy. And it worked.
And it worked.
Wow, yeah. That's fucking fascinating. Mm-hmm. You know, there are like trans women who try to breastfeed.
I was going
to
just automatically start
Doesn't
shaking
work.
My head.
But they do it. They try. Doesn't work. So at this point, everything sounds pretty good. It sounds like for an adoption, it's pretty textbook. Mm-hmm. You have a loving family. Mm-hmm. They're still together. You have a brother who didn't treat you like garbage. Mm-hmm. They were upfront about the adoption. Mm-hmm. Were you trying to see your biological parents, or you just had the narrative that they didn't want you, so why
I just had the narrative that they could not raise me, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I didn't know, I didn't, yeah, I was, I never assumed anything. I didn't have this story.
Yeah, so you kind of just lived your life as like a typical high school kid without mm-hmm. thinking about it too much. except for sometimes it's going like, I look and act different than these motherfuckers.
Yeah. I did identify as being adopted, but yeah, you know, like it's a part of my story. So it was a part of, yeah.
Yeah.
So I wasn't embarrassed by it, but I also wasn't, you know.
Were you the only person in your friend group that was adopted?
I believe so. One other gentleman who actually was adopted from the same agency I went to Kingwood High School with.
I remember one of my best friends in high school, Scott Lever. He was adopted and he was 6'5". We call him Surfer Joe. He's 6'5" blonde guy. Mm-hmm. And he was adopted. And I just remember, I just had this, I guess I met him probably like eighth grade or ninth grade. And I remember just, I when I heard he was adopted, I just had this image of him like in a cage. Mm-hmm. Like you get adopted kids from a cage in my head. And I was this,
or a vagina, but
but like, you know, that you go like almost like the Pound, like you go, right. And you, these kids are in cages and you go, hey, I like that one, the one barking at me, like open the door.
Yeah.
I never know, obviously that's not what it is, but I just always had it. So I had this image of him like in a cage in my head, but we never talked about it. Isn't that weird?
Like, no, I was a bully, so I did put him in a cage.
Yeah, I used to beat him up no, he was fucking huge anyway.
Yes.
So okay, so everything's, and then at some point this dysphoria may be caused from the adoption and the confusion and who you are and your identity. Because mm-hmm. identity, obviously, particularly when you're involving ethnicity and culture, mm-hmm. can be very confusing. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was talking to a friend of mine the other day about who's half white, half black. And I've never known someone who's half white, half black, who didn't go through at least a period of real militant blackness.
Hmm.
At least a period where they just were like, fuck white people.
Yeah.
They had to embrace it for a minute, mm-hmm. to kind of get in touch with their black roots and then come out the other side. But almost every mixed person I know has gone through a phase of that.
Where yeah, they had I stole to address a lot. It.
Oh, yeah. We love stealing.
Mexicans love stealing. We're so good at it.
No, white people are great at colonizing. So,
that's true.
So, you said, so when did you start rebelling? When did these feelings start manifesting into your drug and alcohol situation?
I think I smoked marijuana. I smoked weed when I was 13, and I just got kind of hooked on, but.
So you smoked weed 13 at school? By the dumpsters in the back?
Yeah. Kind of thing?
With the cool kids?
I don't know. I'm sorry. It was at Young Life as a Christian.
Of course it was.
Yeah.
A Christian camp.
Primo, and I was laced with cocaine and
what?
Yeah.
Hold on.
I took three hits and I was like floating on air and I was slapping kids in the face and I was having sex with my boyfriend in the back of the ministry.
At 13?
Yeah. I was God a runaway.
Dang. You ran away at 13?
Yeah, for like 27 days.
Pack up, because I have this idyllic, nice existence with this nice family. Dad's a pilot, yeah, mama's a giant.
Dad, and all of a sudden, my dad has
now
a
you're
Rolls
fucking,
Royce.
You're fucking yeah. people in the back and you're running away. When did you first, how long, when you, okay, did you run away? Like I ran away, which is, I'm running. I put like a, like Snuffy Smith.
I didn't go very far, but yeah, I definitely.
A bandana on a stick and I went up the street. No.
Yeah, that's it. I'm out of here.
No, you ran away to where? Like
taking my Girl Scout badges with me. No, I did. I just, two friends, like, well, friends that I'd met that were, you know, from a different high school so that my mom couldn't find me. I just.
And how long are you gone for?
I think we're say like 27 days.
Jesus Christ. That's a legit runaway. Mm-hmm. And at this point you were doing weed and coke?
I was just smoking weed and, roofing myself. It's like roofies.
Roofing yourself.
Yeah.
First of all, I would love to roof myself.
Too. Like,
I haven't had sex with myself in a long time, and I think that would happen. Yeah. So, I have. You're talking about GHB in particular, or Rufinol?
Rufinol. Rufinol. Sorry.
Rufinol. Okay. Mm-hmm. So it helps you sleep, right? It's better than the Ambien I've heard.
For days with a cock in your mouth. Yeah.
No, but you can just take a little bit of Rufinol if you have problems sleeping, and you wake up feeling really refreshed. I've heard.
It's been a while.
Okay.
But yeah.
But where do you even get, who has access
these
to that?
These assholes, these kids. I would trade my lunch money.
Are they rich kids or what?
Such rich kids. I come from a very,
that's a problem, the rich kids.
The entitled.
So you went to private schools?
No, I went to public, but it was Kingwood, which is north of Houston.
So it was kind of like a magnet-y type of like white school?
Yeah. Like I went to high school with the Foremans, George, and 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 George.
That's interesting because my high school, I grew up in, I think we talked about this, very shitty public schools, right?
Mm-hmm.
And like I say, my high school, and this is not a race thing, but my high school is 70% black and 30% terrified. Was a joke I say,
mm-hmm.
which is, it was literally 65% black, and it was, an inner city school. We couldn't have night football games because of riots.
Mm-hmm. Where's like, this? Literally. Where were you?
It's called T.C. Williams. There's a movie about my school called Remember the Titans. It was
T.C. Williams.
T.C. Williams. Yeah. T.C. Williams Titans. And now it's called Alexandria City Public School.
Are you in the movie?
No, but Jesus Christ, don't get me started. Cause I would have been fucking, I played on the football team. I was age appropriate when that movie was being cast. I was in my early 20s when that movie
you
was being
just
cast.
Went off to Princeton,
and I didn't even get a fucking audition for it.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember I was watching a movie and the trailer, and I go, that looks like my high school. And I found out there's a movie about my high school.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I called my agent. I was like, you guys are fired. Fuck you.
Yeah, seriously. You should have been the main football player.
I could have been somebody in that Anything. Fucking thing. I mean, and think of the press. Like, hey, an actual football player from T.C. Williams is in the movie.
Yeah.
I'm an actor. Anyway. It ate me up for days. And I remember I was doing a play at the mm-hmm. time in D.C. at the Ford's Theater and mm-hmm. Hair at the Wind. The shitty, it's a dumbass play, it was a dumbass part. And theater's dumb. And I'm sitting there. And I went to the premiere of Remember the Titans in D.C. because I could get an invite. And I wore my varsity jacket.
Of course.
Like a douche. And I don't know. I thought I was trying to like take back some power or something. And I just remember feeling so depressed. I ended up having sex with like a 300-pound like Russian woman that night.
I don't believe anything you're saying.
I swear to God. It was like, it was a really low.
With moment. Your jacket on? Just
no, I took my jacket off and then we fucked. But like I went out to, yeah, it was a really low time because I just, and I think I just found out I had a daughter. It was everything in my life was just, Whoa. At that point, I was just, oh yeah, I was out of it. It was a dark moment. And then this movie comes out. So I was like, very like, I wasn't suicidal. I was like, what the fuck?
I'm going to wear this jacket around.
So thanks for bringing that up. So
anytime.
Okay. So, but this is the thing I say, because my school was so rough and tumble and my senior year, there was a kid, Bigums.
Mm-hmm.
This is his nickname.
Mm-hmm.
Great kid, all state offensive lineman.
Mm-hmm.
He was arrested with cocaine
that
and
sucks.
Handgun. Cocaine
what
with
was
attention.
He doing with the hand? Oh, okay, because it's a rough school.
So, what I learned when I was a senior, because I was one of two white people on the football team,
mm-hmm.
and I would drive some of the black players back to the projects where they lived.
Mm-hmm.
And, the kids who lived in the projects, a lot of them weren't dealers, but they would tell me the stories. And they would say, oh, they're all. Ricky, the lead, like the whole starting lineup, he goes, they're all dealing.
Mm.
I was like, what? He goes, oh, yeah, yeah. They come. He goes, I see them come into my neighborhood in their Mercedes. And I was like, really? And he named, he like didn't give a shit. He was like, yeah, this person, because he was like from Africa. You know what I mean? Because if you were an African black kid, American black kids did not accept you. They just mocked you mercilessly. You know what I mean?
Hmm.
They would like make fun of you like, oh, why are you wearing like a football jersey and dress shoes? So,
mm-hmm.
and they would tell me these stories, you know, and, so I started paying attention to it and yeah, they'd come in and they were all, there was a store called Athletic House
mm-hmm.
in Alexandria, Virginia, which was like an athlete's foot. I don't know if it's franchised or what, but they would all come with like shirts, Athletic House and shoes. I was like the fucking, I knew, I was like the owner of Athletic House is fucking running a mini cartel.
Yeesh.
With my. And one of the coaches was a cop, and they had to fucking know. They fucking knew. Because this guy, Bigums, who's part of the group, mm-hmm. who's starting lineup, he gets arrested with handgun and cocaine with intent mm-hmm. to distribute right before he opening. The captain of the football team, guy named Tracy Fells, years previous, had been same thing. All-state, all-American, huge prospect. TC at the time was ranked number two in the nation as a football team.
Mm-hmm.
Goes to jail. For a cocaine handgun and distribution. So I think, and of course they didn't snitch on whoever the person who was running it, because there was mm-hmm. an adult who was running these guys.
Yeah.
And I just remember thinking like, oh man, these guys are all doing it. And the year that I was a senior, when they were all running and you could just tell what they would show up with, the money and the cars and mm-hmm. the shoes. It was the worst year T.C. Williams had had in like 15 years. Because how can you focus on being a great football team when you're running a mini cartel in Alexandria, Virginia?
Yeah.
And they were just like, you hear a lot of whispering and quiet and mm-hmm. like, you know, they were out late at night. There's a lot of weird shit going on. I feel like I knew, and the team just tanked. And seven of the starters were
yeah.
dealing. So my weird, bizarre, stupid, fucking odd revenge is Sports Illustrated was doing a feature about T.C. Williams. And after the movie came out. And they interviewed me. And they said, T.C. Williams was the best football team in the state for years,
mm-hmm.
for decades. And now they're terrible. Why? What's the reason? Because before, one of the themes of the movie is that the racial tension created yeah. this healthy competition, which made them a better team. Because what T.C. Williams, God, this is a lot, but I'll try to wrap it up. There was an all-white school named Hammond and
yeah.
all black school named Hammond, all white school named GW, whatever it was. They made the school during the summer. They made the edifice. And then they said the next year they go, here are white people, here are black right. people, go. So they literally just, it wasn't a slow integration. And this is the 71 this happened. They just put a school full of all white people and a school full of all black people in the same building and began the school year. So you can imagine. And the movie talks about, because so you have all the best white players going like, fuck you.
Yeah.
All the best black people, fuck you. And they ended up pushing themselves to be better. And yeah. obviously they all became friends. And they were undefeated. And they just blew everyone out of the fucking water. And that's what the movie's about.
Yeah.
About how like the racial tension somehow created this, galvanized this team. Anyway. So when I was there, I said, well, the reason the difference is because they were all dealing drugs.
Oh, no.
I said, the starters, when I was there, they were all dealing drugs. They couldn't focus, and it's a problem, and people knew. No one did anything about it, and it's messed up. And I forget what Sports Illustrated kept in there,
mm-hmm.
but they kept enough in there that my English teacher
– oh, no.
Now at this point, I've graduated from high school for years. My English teacher called me up. Dying laughing. I was like, oh my God, you better never try to come back here again. He goes, I loved it. He goes, but they're furious at you. I was like, fuck them. They should have cast me in the movie. Although they had nothing to do with the movie.
My revenge is yours.
So anyway, but the whole point of me saying that is this.
Sure.
Because there was so much danger associated with drugs, people going to jail, drive-by shootings, we'd be held after school because of drive-by shootings.
Yeesh.
People were getting killed by drive-by shootings at this time. This is like the early 90s. So because of that, drugs never felt cool.
Yeah.
There was never a cool – the kids that were doing cocaine in my school were about to go to jail.
Yeah.
They weren't – now, meanwhile, across the street, it's Episcopal High School and then St. Stephen's. They were all doing tons of drugs and tons of fucking and all this shit.
Mm-hmm. But not getting
and laid. Here I am in the rough school, mm-hmm. straight edge, not getting laid because all that shit was just terrifying. You know what I mean? So – for your situation, you're in the school, like, yeah, it's rebellious to do drugs in your situation.
Mm-hmm.
In my situation, it's not rebellious.
Well, actually, I think with the cool kids and the kind of privileged kids that I grew up with, it was the cool thing to do. It was, you know.
Of course.
Right.
Of course it is. Because
for me, it was never cool. It was never a cool thing. I was always numbing out in some way.
Interesting. What were you numbing out?
Yeah, part of it was sort of that, like, I just really don't, where the fuck am I? Well, I don't belong. I don't belong in this. And my dad was a pilot. We grew up in all different countries. He was primarily in Asia and Korea. So he's always gone. And
your dad was always gone.
Mm-hmm.
And you never talked to your dad about any of this stuff.
Never. I don't even think to this day I have. Yeah. That it was just, hey, you're leaving me with my mom, bless her heart. She does have, you know, some sort of personality issues, so it was very hard growing up with it.
And so when you try to talk to your mom, was it possible to talk to her about any of this stuff?
No. There was no...
Did you try?
No. I mean, No.
And your brother, you didn't
7 years older, so he's gone.
Yeah, he's gone.
Yeah. And he was a Mensa member and Army intelligence, and he's a lawyer. So we were always trying to aspire to do our best. Even in my sort of rebellious stage, I was like, well, I've got to make the varsity, you know, cross country. I got to do varsity soccer. I got to, you know.
What was your mantra? What was fueling you?
Probably just whatever it is. Honestly, my faith in Christ, like my faith in God was just like, is still.
Got it. Let me rephrase this. So I did something to talk about. I did something called Landmark Forum, which is basically adult Buddhism. And I was like, this is so dumb. Why am I doing it? I got roped into it. But I learned a lot. And one of the things I learned was that what they believe, it's very Buddhist, but they believe that we basically create a mantra from our childhood. Mm-hmm. And the mantra is basically a command to ourselves and to the world mm-hmm. of almost like a mission statement about who you are, what you need, and what you want. And that mantra is a thing that keeps you going, mm-hmm. but it's also the thing that slowly kills you. So my mantra, for example, was, because that's a little bit different, that's like faith and belief, but my mantra was, because I was poor, mm-hmm. my clothes were, I wasn't poor, but I was, you know, lower middle. My clothes were all hand-me-downs from my brothers. Mm-hmm. My dad cut my hair literally with a bowl. People don't realize that a bowl cut is an actual thing. He literally would put mm-hmm. a bowl in my head and cut around it. And I had bad acne. I had really bad lisp. I had like a lisp like this, and I had like chronic tonsillitis, so I couldn't really talk like this. And my favorite drink was a Sprite, and I'd be like, can I have a Sprite? I'd have to, they'd call me out in middle class for speech lessons and shit like that. Mm-hmm. So I was, people thought I was retarded. And I knew I wasn't retarded. I knew that I was smart, right? And or at least I believed I was smart. Who knows if I'm smart? But the point is,
right.
My mantra became, listen to me, I'm smart. Whether that's the actual mantra, but some variation of that mm-hmm. became the motivating factor for everything in my life. Mm-hmm. It's why I became a comic. Mm-hmm. It's why I became an actor. It's why I have a podcast. It's why I'm a writer as well. Everything became some variation of self-expression. Mm-hmm. Now, the flip side, of course, for that mantra is if someone is dismissing me and treats me like I'm dumb or overtalks me or treats me like I'm white trash or whatever, I lose my fucking shit, kind of like Marty McFly mm-hmm. being told he's chicken. Mm-hmm. So for you, because we're talking about, we're going to the muddy waters of addiction, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. The mantra that you created when you were younger, other than your belief in Christ, because you believe in Christ is something that's like an issue of faith and kind of like a green light in the distance to go mm-hmm. to. But the mantra that kind of like the sort of the double-edged sword mantra that kept you going, was it some version of like I'm better than people think I am?
You know, it's weird because I think when I was removed from my mom, right, and then. It was like a don't give up, don't die. Don't give up, don't die. Sort of like you know, when you're given up for adoption, there is and I didn't get that bond, that chemical bond with my birth mom that I.
But she did breastfeed you, so you don't think that was part of. Oh, your birth mom. Okay, yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. Got it. So do you think that part of your mantra was.
So I think my major trauma wound, my deep-seated trauma wound is that being separated from my birth mom.
For your birth mom. Mm-hmm. And so the actions that you took.
Just don't die.
To become a hard worker and successful.
Resilience.
Mm-hmm. Were you trying to prove to your adoptive parents your worth?
No, I think I was just trying to prove to myself that I am allowed to be a human on this earth.
Yeah. Like, yeah. You can't kill me. You can't give me up. You can't lose me. I'm going to survive. I'm going to like win.
Yeah.
Okay. So, and then from the physiological point of view, mm-hmm. when you ingested drugs, you just took them. They just worked. They were like,
just sort of a way to, I think it was just a way to, just as a coping. I used to just coping until I had two C-sections, and I think it became more of those hurt, but.
So C-sections, you're jumping ahead in the foreplay here.
Yeah.
So when you were in high school.
So I went from smoking weed, drinking, and that was it.
And you went to college, right?
And then I went to college.
Were you a good student? Did you get into a good college.
A decent student.
Decent student for being a
And I got a full ride playing soccer, you know.
You got a full ride playing soccer to where?
I went to Baylor and then I went to Ouachita Baptist. I transferred school, so D1, D2.
Okay, D1, D2. And you were like a soccer star and all good. And
so the Mexican
you.
No, I just really...
Arriba.
Yeah. Just knew what to do. I trained really hard. I always trained really hard when in sports. But
and did you want to be a professional soccer player?
Not really. Yeah. Not, I mean, you aspire to be something like that, but it's a lot of work.
Of course. But you got a free ride in college.
Yeah.
Were you captain of the team?
I was.
MVP, stuff like that?
Well, just captain, yeah.
Okay, captain. So you do that for 4 years. You transfer. When you're done with college. Now, while you're doing – soccer is also a very demanding sport. Lots of running, obviously.
Yeah.
Were you still smoking weed a lot? Were you doing other drugs?
I wouldn't do it on the field. No.
Yeah.
No.
But after a game, you'd light up and were you getting drunk too?
Yeah, but I don't like alcohol. I love pain medication.
So when did the pain medication enter your life?
Just after the C-section, I think even before.
And you were young. You were early 20s?
23, yeah.
23.
When I had.
And you'd already been smoking weed.
Yeah.
You'd already kind of this. Did you feel like your life after you graduated college that you were on a track that worked for you?
I didn't know if I was supposed to get a husband or if I was supposed to get a job.
Interesting.
Yeah. So I went to paralegal school after I had my son or during I had my, I guess my uncle was a family law lawyer and my dad said, yeah, we got to get you a trade. So he started training me. My uncle did in Houston and then I became a paralegal.
Paralegal.
Yeah.
So that's going to be decent money.
It's
and
great
obviously
money.
You enjoy that work.
I love it.
And then you get pregnant accidentally, I'm assuming.
Yeah. Yeah, you know.
You were married.
No, since I'm a Christian, I got married because I thought it was the right thing to do.
After you got pregnant.
Yeah.
Shotgun wedding, baby.
Yeah. I was like, I think you're the dad. And he's like, I'm pretty sure I could be. So we did the test and he was.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Wait, you did the test while you were pregnant?
You can't do that. No.
With amniocentesis, you can't, but it's dangerous.
It's dangerous. Yeah.
Okay. After he was born. So he was there through the whole.
He was like a month old when I called dad up, baby daddy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So here's the thing. I was like, he's probably off doing coke and hookers. I don't want to call him up and be like, so in 6 months.
Kill his buzz.
Not at all.
Wanted to wait to see if the baby came out. The baby came out probably
looking
just like.
What are you going
to
prove? Yeah.
Did the baby come out looking like the dad?
He was so excited. Yeah.
Oh, he was excited.
Yeah. He said, hey, I want to see him.
Yeah.
And he was like, I thought you might make this phone call, you know.
Oh,
Kingwood's a small town. I went back home and. Yeah.
And you guys were trying to make it work?
We tried to make it work.
And he was the father to the second child?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's how odd is that you have such a, your relationship mirrors your mom's relationship?
A little bit, right? Yeah. Except for I was like, you're not taking this kid from me.
So you try to make it work. You had your second kid. Mm-hmm. Both times you had C-sections, a lot of pain. And they gave you what? Percocet?
They just give you hydrocodone. But I had
which is Oxycontin, right?
No.
No. Okay, hydrocodone. Oh, that's just like Tylenol.
It's just, yeah. I don't know the
hydrocodone. Okay.
Yeah.
But it's not as it's of the opioids. It's not the most intense.
No. Mm-mm.
So when did you realize that you had an addiction issue?
Well, the pizza guy comes over and he wants to get heroin one day and I didn't have any pills. And he said, if you just put this in a Visine bottle and snort it, it'll last you. So,
he had heroin.
He had heroin.
Domino's?
Black tar. Domino's fucking mother pizza.
What's black tar heroin versus regular good old white?
I don't know. I've only done black tar heroin. You dilute it and you can inject it, I guess. I've never intravenously used.
Now, obviously you're a smart person. Mm-hmm. So the pizza guy comes. Number one, taking cues from a pizza guy, problematic. Number one.
He was just a random pizza guy. No, he's my friend. I say pizza guy, but there's a backstory. He's my friend.
Okay, so you know. And he goes, I have heroin. Now, obviously, since age zero, we're told heroin is going to kill you. What made you go?
When you're that addicted to pain medication, you go,
just another step.
All I have to do is do this for a day. Maybe it'll work.
And was the pain from the C-section or other pain?
No, it was all psychological. It was
psychological
all mental.
Pain. Okay.
Yeah, I was just, yeah.
And how's your relationship with your first son at this point? This after your first son?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Between your two kids, you did heroin for the first time.
Mm-hmm. I did.
Okay. And what was your relationship with your first son?
You couldn't pry him from my hands. I mean,
you loved him.
But, yeah, I joke about it on stage, right? Say one of my jokes is the weirdest thing about getting sober is you find out you have kids. So I kind of paint this picture that I'm like this not good parent. But you couldn't pry those boys away from me.
So on one hand, it's a real
oxymoron
because you have a job that you love that has family connected to it. You have a child that you love. And but there's this sort of umami of pain and dysphoria that you have that you don't know what it is yet, probably.
I guess it's just there. It's there, yeah.
Right?
And I would get like an 8-ball of, so then 8-ball of cocaine and like.
What's an 8-ball again?
8-ball, I don't really.
Is that just a measurement of cocaine?
$20, $40, $60, $80,
$100. Isn't 8-ball a mixture of cocaine and something else, speed or something?
No, it's a weight.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I would do it all by, like, so here people party and I see all these comedians partying and getting, you know, fuck that. I wanted to be alone when I did heroin and cooking.
Wild. So it wasn't social for you at all?
Not at all. When people go out to Sixth Street and they party and they do all this, I never was like that.
So you would do there, was it to fall asleep?
No, it was just to, once I did it the first time, for two years, it was just to, honestly, I felt like I was going to die if I didn't have it, you know?
How often were you doing it?
Every day.
Every day heroin?
Every day for 2 years, yeah.
Every day in April?
No, to April of cocaine. If I were going to get some cocaine to do with heroin, I would get like a lot. It was a lot.
April's cocaine.
Mm-hmm.
And heroin is?
So, and then heroin, if you say a balloon, it's like $50 worth.
And you would do?
I would do about $50 worth a day.
A day.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not necessarily crippling to do $50 a day. It's not great.
It is, yeah. I mean, so there were.
So a $1,500 a month heroin habit.
Mm-hmm.
And then cocaine as well.
Every once in a while, yeah.
Okay. And no alcohol, really?
Sometimes I drink, but drinking doesn't, I mean, it doesn't match when you're trying to do
and
avoid.
Weed as well happening?
Weed just doesn't.
Sure. Mm-mm. So this is the thing. Were you doing any psychedelics at this point?
No. I'd done psychedelics one time in college my senior year.
You probably combined it with other shit.
No, I just did it and it was not, it was in my jam.
It wasn't your jam. Interesting. No. So heroin, you're like, that's the stuff, daddy.
Oh, yeah.
And it just made sense. And are you going through the day? So going through the day,
we divorce, we separate, and then I meet an assistant district attorney. I start dating this prosecutor in Harris County, where I'm from.
So a man without a soul. Got it.
Man without he was the one who got me into recovery, actually.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah. I was just stealing. I was stealing and robbing people, and I would get caught. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So you and the guy divorced. Was it a bad divorce or just are you guys still friends?
He's basically, so my dad's giving him all his tools if he passes. He's our family. He's like.
Oh, he's going to be a lawyer too?
No, my ex-husband? Tools as like, like my dad has this huge shed with all his old tools. He's like, I'm going to give them to
Chris.
So what's
your ex-husband do?
He has his own home inspection business.
Okay.
Yeah.
So he's doing okay.
He's doing great. Yeah.
He's doing great. And you guys now get along.
We get along now. But then, yeah, it was awkward. I mean, he divorced.
Of course.
Two kids, you're like, I don't know, where's the sock?
Yeah, after two kids. Like, yeah. I, you know, me trying to, you know, my daughter's mother. The first one, this is a whole other story, but the second one, you know, it's we're getting there. After, you know, a couple of years. But
it takes time.
But also we'd only been dating for 2 months and we didn't get married and we didn't have two kids. So there at least is an understanding of like, okay, shit doesn't work out.
Right.
But once you have two kids and you're married, that's a whole other situation.
Yeah.
It's a lot more entanglement, to say the least. So the fact that you're able to somehow manage a friendship at all is admirable for both of you.
Yeah.
I hope you see that, right?
No, yeah. I mean, not even just, we're not just friends. He's I consider him like family.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
So when you first divorced, was he still in the picture with the kids or was he gone?
He's been always very present.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
So, but that was very painful, the divorce.
It was probably the most painful event.
And because you loved him. Did he leave you?
He left. Yeah, there was, you know, we were sleeping around and drugs were involved and it was just one of those, this isn't going to work.
So you're both just kind of all over the place.
Yeah.
Crazy people.
And he didn't like leave and go find another woman and get married. We were just kids. I was too out of my mind on heroin. Yeah.
So is that part of the reason why he left? Because he's like, your heroin's an issue?
Nobody even knew.
Nobody knew. You're good. Mm-hmm. You're good. You can keep a secret.
You can keep a secret.
Anyway, so he left. You have two kids. Mm-hmm. He left. Financially, you're in an okay spot, though.
Yeah.
You're not like having sucked dick for crack in an alley.
No.
Okay. Like me right now in
the
trailer.
Right. I would do that anyways.
So You're doing the heroin. Were you saying to yourself, I could just do this forever?
Pretty much. Or not forever. I knew there was an end game.
But that's an interesting thing because you're kind of like, I think it's the same a lot of times with men with like cheating and stuff. And they're having an affair. Mm-hmm. Like sometimes affairs just run their course and then you go back. But ultimately, I think if you know anything about human nature, like, okay, then you're just going to find another affair. Every married friend I know who has an affair, like, oh, it's over. I got it in my system. Like, motherfucker, you just ingrained it into your system.
Yeah.
More stupid.
Yeah.
Really, Chris D'Elia? You're good now after a bunch of therapy, quote unquote. Anyway, I just don't buy it. I think that it's one of those things like, unless you hit rock bottom. So what was your rock bottom?
My rock bottom was in 2016, 2015, I think. Yeah. Because here's the problem. People kept going, we'll get you a lawyer if you're in trouble. You know, well, the DA kept taking me back in a relationship, you know, and here I am just like, okay, so if I'm getting away with it, then I'm not
aware. So
there's
a rock bottom, exactly.
Right. So finally I was like, okay, well, if... Yeah, I just... it wasn't life or death, like, as in, oh, this is going to kill me. It was just, you know... and it wasn't my kids. I don't know. It was just... the pain of being me was too severe.
But was there a precipitating moment? I used to do a joke about the fact that with a lot of addicts, for drug addicts, there's a moment where they're on skid row, where they lose all their money, their family.
Yeah, I was off to state jail for a long time.
Okay.
13 months.
Okay, yeah, that's a long time.
So my dad came and he said, well, don't sign that paper when I was in county. I said, well, he said, I'll get you a lawyer. And I said, I'm done. Yeah. Something's got it. Something or else I'm, you know.
Did you go to jail?
I did.
For how long?
Collectively or just that time?
That time.
That time, 13 months.
Oh, so you resigned yourself to it because you're like, I need this to help me get clean.
Because I was an entitled brat. And finally I said, y'all, this is it.
Yeah.
I need to learn.
And in a weird way, you kind of knew it was sort of leading to something like that or akin to that.
I knew that I was going to wind up really hurting somebody.
And what was the thing that made you go to jail? What did you do? I stole from
my Al-Anon sponsor when I was my Al-Anon's codependency. So there's AA, Alcoholics Anonymous, and I was.
How ironic that you still steal from someone that you to work out your codependency.
She was getting a divorce, and I took the engagement ring and pawned it. I was like, I'll get it out, but I got caught for it.
How'd you get caught?
So you can wave in cameras and they have your license. I'm not like a real criminal.
But they had to go find, they had
I
to
am
go,
a criminal.
They went around the pawn shop.
It was
to
like
find
a right down the street from her house.
Oh boy.
You know what I mean? So I was just asking for it, but yeah.
I could have done something like that in my life for sure. 100%. I could totally see myself doing that. So go to jail 30 months. Wow. That's crazy because also she could have at that point, cause she
got her stuff back.
Could she have said, no, it's okay, and you not gone to jail? But she wanted you to go to jail.
I think she was getting out of a marriage where she was, you know, married to an alcoholic, and she had done a lot of recovery, and she was done. So it was, her and I had a relationship where she knew, you know, Rachel needs a little bit more of a push. I'm sure I could have gotten probation for it, but I wound up turning myself in and making an amends to her before I went to jail.
Oh, wow.
Because I couldn't face the reality of not being able to tell her I was wrong, you know. And she was, you're so smart and you have two boys. And then I made another amends to her when I got out, you know, as a part of the recovery process. So
are you still friends with her?
We're not friends, but we're, you know,
you respect cordial. Her, but also you're kind of like, you're a bitch. Okay, yeah, got it.
No.
Come on. Anyway, so a little bit. So you got, the first time you got out, you're obviously clean now. It's out of your system.
Mm-hmm.
You have your two kids.
Mm-hmm.
You have a second chance.
Mm-hmm.
And then what made you fuck that one up?
When? What? With the other one?
So after the first stint in jail.
Sex and love addiction is a real thing too.
Yeah.
It is.
So after you were out of jail, what happened?
I got a cop, stayed at my parents' house. My dad said, take a bus, get a job. And that's what I did. I got a job and I started working my way up. And I started working as a paralegal. And then I got an apartment and I got a car. And I just...
And your kids are with you the whole time?
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. They came to visit me when I was in jail with my mom and dad too.
Okay. So when you got out of jail, they just moved back in with you.
Everything's fine. Yeah.
It was like your grandparents took there, or your parents
no,
took there.
No, there was no... And we didn't... Okay. We don't do... I mean, with all the lawyers in our family, yeah.
So... And they're too young at this point to really understand what the fuck's going on, right?
They, I mean, they grew up in AA. I took them to meet, yeah.
Okay,
and
so.
They've never seen me drunk.
So now you're working, you're back, you're out of jail, you're recovered, you're off the heroin, right?
Yeah, I think so. It could still be in my system for the amount I did.
So what was the thing that, because obviously there are other stints, so what happened again? I guess the trauma was never healed, right?
Started. Yeah, AA alone isn't going to help someone who has trauma.
Yeah.
You know, just going to therapy and have a therapist, have a healing group, like a group, what's called the listening, clarity listening group. So, yeah, and then isolation, I think, is one of the biggest contributors for alcoholics.
Sure.
So.
Because you relapse again, right?
Mm-hmm.
How many times have you relapsed?
Several. I mean.
Several. You don't have a number?
I don't.
Six, seven, something like that? Yeah.
Not even. No, I wouldn't know. Because I started, I got into recovery when I was 17, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When's the last time you relapsed?
So I relapsed on Adderall.
Oh.
2011.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's good. I mean, I was about to say, like, I think it was going to say Tuesday.
So I've been clean and sober for 7 years now from all drugs and alcohol. I haven't had a drink since 2009, but what I relapsed on after heroin was Adderall.
Got it.
Yeah.
And of course that makes, you know, sense because you're like, oh, it's Adderall. It just helps me focus. I'm doing all this hard work.
I was
work.
Really depressed. And I had left the DA. I was in this River Oaks multi-million-dollar trust fund recovered guy I was with who had proposed with this $32,000.
Oh, you were the guy who owns recovery centers.
Yeah.
They're all scumbags.
Well,
he's a scumbag. Everyone who owns a recovery center is a piece of shit. It's the weirdest fucking thing.
Well,
he
owns like half of Houston. His family
does. He's definitely a piece of shit.
Yeah.
Oh, God. So I cannot tell you how many like stories I've heard about people who own recovery centers and what they fucking are up to.
Some of them, yeah.
It's fucking bizarre.
I think he's an investor.
Because
though.
On one level, like if you're making money off that shit,
it is. Yeah, it is a little churchy.
And obviously so sex, love, addiction. The minute you're single, you're like, I need a boyfriend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's still sort of it's a problem. That's why sex and love addiction is still a problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So, all right. So the last.
I just can't stop having sex.
I have. By the way, her number, her Instagram is the last time you relapsed, what made, because one of my best friends has a cocaine problem.
Mm-hmm.
He's a comic in LA.
Mm-hmm.
His name is, every comic in LA.
Yeah.
No, but he has, I love this guy, smart guy. And my other best friend, they'll do the pills and the coke and da-da-da-da. And then they're like, oh, man, I'm clean. I just da-da. And then I'll see them drinking.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, and I don't want to be like, what are you doing drinking? But I'm kind of like, hey, you all right?
Yeah.
I don't know what to say.
Yeah.
So I was like, you all right? Like, oh, yeah, it's cool. No, I can have a drink or two. It's not a problem. And so in my head, I go, okay, they're telling me that they can have a drink or two. It's fine.
Yeah. Autonomous.
And then I'll see them drunk, and I'm like, well, now they're getting drunk. And, and then, sure enough, a month later, they were in rehab, and then fucking coke, and blah, blah, because it always is.
When someone who is an addict starts off with, it's fine. Trust me. But I wouldn't tell you this if it was fine. Then you know. All right.
And so every time I call him,
He has a tell. He's still one of my best friends. I'll call him and be like, hey, how you doing? Good, how are you? Fuck, he's back on it. The minute
it's
like,
it's interesting they answer.
Like, how you doing? You okay? Yeah, why? Oh, fuck. He's fucking back on it. And I think he is currently actually doing it right now because every time I call him, he's like very like edgy. I'm like, God damn it. So as a friend, it's very hard to know what to do.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So and he's been in recovery 6 or 7 times, whatever. So I guess my question is, because I think a lot of people go through this, right? And one of the things that he's told, because it would send him into a depression that he'd had to go back into recovery. And one of the things that got him through it was people in the program were like, hey, it's my 14th time and now it finally sucks. And also the idea that each time you do it and you recover, you go through rehab, it's practice. You accrue more tools to help you effectively navigate your sobriety. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So that's why it helped him to go, okay, so it's not like I'm failing. I'm just slowly getting more tools so it'll finally stick. Now, I don't think it has with him yet, nor with my best friend who's still up to shit. So for you, what made it stick? What was the thing that made
it? It's life or death for me.
Yeah.
If I put it in my body, I'm not alive. And think about the last, I do think about, okay, I'll go to jail, but I also think I have no promise or guarantee to be on this, to be the human on earth, you know, like I will probably.
So you almost died on it.
There were times when I was like, this is just food poisoning. They're like, and mixed with cocaine and like in the hospital.
You never OD'd.
Yeah.
Oh, you did OD?
Yeah.
How many times did you OD?
A couple of times. And then my mom's standing there at the edge of the bed. I have people in AA coming in with like a Bible, you know.
Oh,
and I'm like, sitting there. It's just food poisoning. Rights. And they're like, you're on like a copious amount.
Did you ever have an NDE?
No.
No, you never had an NDE?
No.
Really? Interesting. Okay. I guess you don't get NDEs. It's usually not from cocaine overdoses and heroin overdoses. Usually we get hit by a car or something. So you've never had any of these moments where you OD, like visions of your future or anything in your mind that you can hold on to of like feelings of like, I can't leave my kids or anything. Do you have anything because I feel whenever I've had one NDE, but not the hardcore one that people talk about, but I feel there's always something pulling me and it's always either it's like my family or my daughter. Now it would obviously be my daughter. So,
and now it's me.
So for you, it's just now like, it's just I have me. To, yeah.
Cause yeah, of course I love my family and my kids are my world.
Yeah,
but
of course.
At the end of the day, it's me that I'm living for.
Yeah. And what is the thing that is now fueling you? What is your motivating factor as a comic and as a lawyer? Is there something that you kind of, what's your goals are? And I'll give you an example. So for me, for example, which is part of the problem with my comedy career, is I've never been the guy. First of all, I've always been like remarkably unambitious. When I graduated from
Princeton,
well, you know,
that's very unambitious.
I just applied and got my two older brothers are way smarter, and they're both geniuses. They're both number one out of high school, and they're both like top five out of their Ivy League scholars.
The valedictorian.
They're both valedictorian, and they're fucking genius. They're just say they're two of the smartest people I've ever known, and they got rejected by Princeton. And my English teacher wrote an essay for the Washington Post. They got picked up by Reader's Digest and went fucking viral before shit was viral. Basically saying that Princeton was a racist, elitist school because they wouldn't accept kids from a black high school.
Yeesh.
I get
harsh.
In the next year.
Yeah.
Coinkadink.
You're black.
I'm not. Yeah, I was the quote. I mean, believe me. Do you know how many times people call me a wigger when I got to fucking college? I wore parachute pants and 555 soul, which is like pre-FUBU.
Yeah.
There's one person listening to this podcast who's getting my references. Triple Five Soul is still around. Anyway, so, but like baggy pants and fucking like, yo, I was a professional break dancer for years. I was a go-go dancer when I was in college and grad school. So, anyway, my point is they're way smarter than me. So I got in as a kind of like affirmative action situation. Half joking, half true. And I think that if I am smart at all, it's sheer willed myself. I tricked myself. I willed myself. I worked hard. I'm not nearly as smart as my brothers at all. They're both crazy smart. Anyway, so the point is, what keeps me going now, the thing like my gold star, it's never been like, I want a Netflix special. I want to perform Madison Square Garden. It's never That's never been the thing for me. I don't know what it is. But the thing for me that I look at in terms of a personal goal would be an Oscar, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or an Emmy or something like that. It's just kind of, I want to do work that is in the canon. If it's not an Oscar Emmy, like something, a work that's something in a movie that could be remotely iconic. Like my buddy Garrett Dillahunt, he was in No Country for Old Men. He was in The Road. He's in 12 Years a Slave. He was The Walking Dead. So he's been a part of all these kind of like interesting, iconic series and movies. And I've always looked at myself as like, I just want to be in something good before I fucking die.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to be a good dad.
Mm-hmm. That's the biggest role.
Yeah. But I don't really have any mantra that's fueling me anymore that is like a chip on the shoulder type of thing.
Mine is, if there's a heaven, I'm going and I'm taking everybody with me.
So a lot of it is,
I'm a huge Christian.
So you want to be a good, you want to be a good person.
Yeah. Like even whatever you see or you don't see.
Yeah.
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 So I have a huge, so one thing about me, I hit my knees in the morning and at night, you know, I thank God for my sobriety, but I'm, yeah.
Wait, you hit your knees?
I pray.
Oh.
And then I suck Jesus's dick. And we have a great relationship. He's never cheated.
If you have a special, it better be called sucking Jesus's D.
It is.
Sucking the D of Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And let him just come in your face and wash away your sins.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a beautiful thing.
Angel sperm.
So you, when all this stuff happens though, and all the craziness, have you ever had doubt about that? Have you ever had doubt about Jesus and religion? No, never.
Not once.
Not once.
Mm-mm.
Never had the 40 days in the desert like Jesus himself?
No.
No. Interesting. Okay, cool. Yeah. And are your kids, are they religious?
Thomas is like figuring it out, but yeah, they both believe in God. Yeah.
Yeah.
Christian is a Christian.
So your idea is to, you have a need to give back and to help people. Is it some things that what you do with your legal work, for example?
It's deeper than that. You know, it's just to make sure that people feel like, you know, like it's deeper than just the legal work, but all those little things help, right? Even comedy, but yeah, it's, just to make sure people feel like, you know, they're good enough. We're all inherently good when we're born, I think.
For sure.
So.
I have a theory about that,
too. To tap into that.
Do you ever have to reconcile that with being a cum slut?
Okay. Sometimes.
But.
If I could only find good cum, you know.
So, I don't know what you think about this. I've noticed this with my daughter when I take her to the playground. Because my daughter is just fucking... just love, smile, happy, dancing, joy, like everything about her. She goes to the playground. She can be shy, but she just looks at kids and she wants to play with the kids. She wants to play with the little kids. And little girls will come along and be like, hey, do you want to play with my doll? Mm-hmm. Little girls, like she went to this one sand lot and she's little. She's 1.5. She's just knocking over all the sand shit. I said, Jupiter, don't do that. Don't knock over the sand. This girl, she worked hard on that. And the girl's like, you know, I'll make another one. She can knock it over. And I was like, oh, wow. Girls are just naturally so sweet and nice. Boys are evil as fuck.
Yeah.
Holy shit. I cannot tell you how many times I've been out with my daughter and a little boy just gives her the fucking stare like, I'll kill you, bitch. I will cut you. I swear to God, kids will look at my daughter in a way that's like, I will fucking soccer style punt this fucking child. 20 yards if he touches my kid.
You need to go to a different playground.
Everywhere. No, it doesn't matter where I go. Kalahari, down the fucking...
Yeah.
Anywhere I go. Just little boys are like... She comes... There's like... I'm like, kids... Boys are nasty sociopaths. So this is what I feel. I feel like girls are born good and society can make them evil.
Hmm.
I feel like society can create evil women. I feel like boys are born evil. And if they're raised well, they can become good people.
Men.
But the natural existence of male is fucking sociopathic evil.
Yeah.
Is Chris D'Elia. That's the natural existence of a man. Seriously. I don't even mean that as
just
an insult.
Prefrontal cortex.
I think they just don't fucking... They don't have the capacity to love in the same... First of all, as you know, as a mother, there is no greater love than the love of a mother for their child. I love my daughter like it's crazy. But like... I can't love my daughter as much as you love your child.
Yeah.
Because it came out of the fucking pussy.
That's what, like, if I don't like drugs and alcohol, but if anyone has any, like, if I'm in a relationship where the guy and the kids, they don't get along,
it's, fuck them.
Yeah, they're fucking trash.
He could have the best heroin in the fucking planet.
Yeah, he can have the biggest cock I've ever put in my ass.
We're learning a lot about Rachel, what she likes and what she doesn't like. Again, her Instagram.
Anal.
Really? You like anal that much?
I have in the past, but he was gay and that didn't turn out well. Or non-binary.
I know, you have AIDS.
I don't know. We'll see.
Anyway, wow, that's fascinating. So you haven't had a drink. Was the last time that you
2009,
relapsed?
December
was there something? 31st. Was there something crazy? Because the joke that I had, which I skipped, mm-hmm. was, yeah, people when they have an alcohol or substance addiction, they like, you know, they're like, oh, they wrecked a car, or they got a DUI, or they got in a big fight, or blah blah blah, and oh shit. But how do you...
I was lying. Yes. I just kept lying.
But the thing about sex and love addiction, particularly sex addiction, like, what's the rock bottom for sex addiction? You wake up in a zoo covered in giraffe cum, like, all right, I got to go to fucking rehab.
Yeah.
Too much giraffe cum.
Or it winds up... You wind up getting into... If the law gets involved, then maybe, you know...
Yeah, the law is always a good way to...
Yeah.
And since then, since 2009, was there... What made you finally stop?
The alcohol? Oh, the
All
first time.
What was the thing that made you finally go, I'm fucking done, and knowing that you're done?
Because everyone looked at me and said, we know now. And so I said, oh, I've been caught.
Oh.
Yeah, it wasn't like sort of a epiphany or this sort of awakening or awareness of, oh, I've got a drug problem. It was, no, they all know now. I was outed. I was out in front of my boyfriend at the time, my family. Oh. It's the first time I ever
So there's
got
no
caught.
Fun because you can't even hide it anymore.
Yeah, I was like, this sucks. What? You know, y'all are going to always question if I'm high.
Wow.
Yeah.
Interesting. So it wasn't like
pissed.
A big precipitating moment, right?
No, I did. I think my mom brought my letter jacket to me when I was in rehab and I was fucking, what, 80? You know, like, I was like, what are you doing, mom? I need my laptop.
Oh, wow. That's fascinating. Mm-hmm. So have you been tempted since then? Have you had moments where you're like, no,
not
don't.
At all.
That's beautiful.
I know.
So everything's great with you, except you just can't find a good man.
I really want some good dick, if you're out there.
Anyway, on that note. Yeah.
I would love to have a husband one day. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah. Well, you're a nice lady.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that you should do a one-woman show. Or write a book. Because I think comedy, stand-up comedy isn't really big enough for your story. You can say it on stage and it'll be fine. Mm-hmm. And you can do like the Christopher Titus route. But Christopher Titus is also pretty much a one-man show.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you know his stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You should watch Christopher
I'll
Titus.
I'll familiarize myself.
Because he was also, I think he was also adopted.
Mm-hmm.
And he had issues. You watch Christopher Titus. Mm-hmm. Watch Christopher Titus because I think his story, and he goes on stage and he just talks about his childhood, his life, and he's mm-hmm. unpacking all this trauma. And he's immensely popular. I mean, for me, it's you know, I'm so much like, how can I reverse engineer jokes that ends with cunt? But like,
yeah.
But he might be an interesting sort of paradigm for you to look at because he became incredibly successful in like the late 90s, early 2000s. And it was a different kind of style. And there is a religious underpinning to it mm-hmm. as well. And he manages to stay funny, you know? So I think that's kind of like a good, but yeah, for someone like you, I think I don't know. Have you thought about a one woman show?
Mm-mm.
No,
I have not.
Hmm. Interesting.
All right.
Interesting. We might have to fucking table that conversation for another day
of the world
or book.
I have thought about writing,
I mean, at the very least, you can get some bits from it.
Yeah.
Because stand-up comedy is a very weird, insular...
It is.
Small. It's a much smaller world than comics think it is. Like, they think everyone cares. I'm like, nobody...
Nobody gives a shit.
You know percentage of the population goes to comedy shows?
Not a lot.
Like, maybe 10% mm-hmm. at most mm-hmm. in America. 5% mm-hmm. goes to comedy shows. And most of them are fucking dorks because they can't tell a joke to their friends.
Right.
So, that's your pinnacle, and I think that there's an audience for people, a bigger audience for you for telling stories that are that when you share, do you ever kind of feel that like, man, I should do like corporate gigs and
no.
Well, there are people who need to hear shit like that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And from a recovery, from being, and I do. I tell all over Houston I'm asked to share my story. Yeah. So.
And there's some people get paid to do it too as well, right?
I would never want that though.
I'd lie about it. I'd be like, oh yeah, it was a horrible. How much money? Yeah, I used to fucking shoot at my butthole.
Yeah.
Anyway, so what do you want to leave the kids with? What parting wisdom?
Yeah, that I'm. I don't know. If you're struggling with drugs and alcohol, call me. I don't know. It's such a huge part, but just be careful.
There's always basically. I mean, obviously, you're good lessoned for the fact that you can always recover.
Sure. And that's not everybody's story, but I feel like if you're, just in general, because
a lot of people give up
a higher power.
Probably, a lot of people probably give up right before they could have.
You know, a lot of our friends die.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ. Anyway, I could talk to you forever. You're very fascinating. Where can people find you if they want to reach out and give you some dick or something?
On the corner of Princess Pilot Priest Instagram.
Princess Pilot Priest.
It's a lot. I have a niece and we had a name for that. And then, in Houston, Texas, promoting my show. I have produced a couple of shows. Facebook, Rachel Faith McMillan, I guess.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for coming, Rachel.
Thanks for having me.
You're great. Have a good night.
You
bye-bye.
Too.